Welcome! You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
And now we see in the United Kingdom, kind of similar to Canada in terms of an advanced nation, they're back into a double-dip recession, two quarters in a row of negative growth, and the austerity is actually propelling advanced economies back into recession, which many of us have argued in Canada and elsewhere that you can't shrink yourself to greatness. We need to invest in people. We need to invest in infrastructure. And if we're to learn anything from the events in Europe, it's that you can't shrink yourself to greatness. Austerity doesn't work, and the people will not be suppressed. They will rise up as they're doing in Spain.
That's the voice of National QP President Paul Moist. On this week's show, we speak to Paul from the 49th Annual QP Convention. We have a conversation with Paul about his perspectives and visions for the future of the labor movement in Canada and globally. So stay tuned.
I'm privileged to be joined by Paul Moist. He's the National President of QP National, and very privileged to have you. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
It's great to be back with you guys again.
Now, you know, we are at a conference where we are hearing a lot of ideas about a vision for how do we fight back the neoliberalism agenda of austerity, of privatization, of cutbacks. And yesterday you did something that was remarkable. It was a breakfast with the president, and it was about talking about precisely the economy. You know, I mean, what is the economy? How should people understand the economy?
Well, we have over 500 delegates here in Victoria, and I reminded them that at our national convention in Vancouver last November, among many other things, delegates debated how do we reacquire our working class values. We're workers, and there's some dignity achieved at work through negotiations, but the broader picture includes our social wages, our public services like universal health care, public education, and there's challenges on all of those fronts in Canada. But our job is to defend and expand those services because that's the ultimate wealth of workers. And so last November, our delegates said, we can't give the economy to the business community or the mainstream media with their business section of all newspapers directed at a small part of the community. We as workers and spending our wages and our social wages, those programs, that's what drives the economy in Canada and around the world. So the breakfast meeting was a chance to reflect upon working class values and a worker's analysis of the economy here in Canada and indeed around the globe.
Now, one of the things we are constantly being told is that, you know, talking about healthcare, education sounds good, it sounds nice, but we just don't have the money. Is that the case?
Well, it's actually absolutely not the case. As we discussed with delegates yesterday, the gross domestic product for Canada and for BC, there's never been more wealth in the Canadian economy. The distribution of that wealth has never been more unequal. But to those who say that, universal health care is very nice, but it's not affordable, we actually can't afford not to have universal health care. It's eminently affordable. It's the choices that elected officials are making. And one of the themes coming out of this 49th QPBC convention is that we are workers, we organize, we represent workers at work, but we must be politically active, provincially, nationally, and internationally.
Well, we talked about the kind of political action that we need. I was questioning the activities around how we engage our communities, because I think that if the labor movement is to be relevant, we need to become prevalent in our communities, where we live, where we are. What are some of the ideas that you feel should lead us into those roles of leadership, of collaboration and cooperation with our communities?
Well, here in BC, I've been struck by the pronounced impact of this 10% shift campaign, where if we as workers spent only 10% of our paycheck on local businesses, local food producers, the local economy, we could have an impact that would preserve jobs in the local economy and would be good for the local economy. So it's a new role, and QPBC is actually leading the discussion in Canada. Much more broadly speaking, we posted a statement on our website just this week in solidarity with students in Quebec, because they're reaching out into community 10 weeks into a student strike saying, why can't we have affordable, accessible post-secondary education? Why can't we put onto the agenda in Canada universally accessible, free education for post-secondary purposes? All of Canada benefits from having an educated citizens, an educated workforce, and many countries have had this debate. So we put a motion on our national website of solidarity with students who are reaching out in Quebec in a way that we haven't seen for a long time, that these debates don't just belong to politicians, they don't belong to the private sector who are infiltrating our universities increasingly, that students are striking a blow for, can't we have a debate in Quebec society in 2012 about having education that's affordable and accessible no matter what your lot in life, no matter what your background is. So I look at people reaching out, and the labor movement has an obligation to work with community groups, work with coalitions. We heard from a worker from the Philippines this week where the struggle is even more pronounced in other countries, where you lay your life on the line to stand up for free trade union rights. So whether it's local, provincial, national, international, as workers, we have a responsibility to put issues on the table and support others, like Quebec students, who are putting important issues on the table.
One of the issues that I feel unites us across communities is the issue of the environment. We are seeing now the devastation that climate change has caused. We now know that there's over 50 million refugees from climate change from other countries, and that number is only increasing. What are we as a union, as the largest national organized union in Canada, doing about the fight against the devastation of their environment? We're looking at projects like the Enbridge Pipeline that we're being told is going ahead regardless of how we feel. You know, how is our movement contributing to that struggle?
Well, this week here at this QP British Columbia convention, I watched with interest and pride a resolution being debated to say no to the Gateway Pipeline without consultation with and respect for First Nations and other members of the communities who will be affected. And I spoke to these delegates this week about Mr. Harper and his, you know, 6 years as Prime Minister of Canada. He has made Canada one of the most Neanderthal countries on the planet when it comes to climate change, taking Canada out of our commitment for the Kyoto Accord. And we spoke out recently, QP, in Alberta. It was rumored that the Wild Rose Alliance, a new party, was poised to take power in Alberta, the source of much of our climate change challenge. And she, Danielle Smith, argued, well, the jury's out on climate change. I'm not sure it's man-made. It's questioning the science. In 2012 in Canada, if somebody purporting to be a leader in society, a budding politician, denies the science of climate change, it's incumbent upon QP and other organizations to speak out. And finally, I said to the delegates this week, Mr. Harper's done many things. He's now going to attack charitable organizations who maybe question the state, like Mr. Suzuki has taken himself off of his own board of directors. This kind of silencing all dissent makes for a weaker democracy in Canada. And when we recognize what Harper's doing, it ought to motivate us to speak out on issues that, you know, maybe go beyond our workplace bargaining, and those are important issues at the workplace. But QP's got to use some of its resources and its voice to speak out for reduction in greenhouse gas emissions and support for people around the world that are struggling to put the climate change issues on the table.
I'm glad that you said that, because when I think about a labor movement, I think we're more than just about jobs. We're about a better community, a better vision of society, one that is collaborative and inclusive. And what I'm hearing on the floor, you know, this notion of inclusion, and there's an issue I think that has been ignore for too long, and that is that of migrant workers. You know, we have now within the labor movement, in many ways allowed, because without an act of resistance, you know, this wouldn't happen, but allowed a second-class citizenry. You know, we have this two-tier system of workers, those who are temporary, those who are fully employed. How do you see us moving forward? It seems to me that there isn't much more we can give up on this ground.
Well, I applaud unions, our sister union, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada over issues of, in Ontario, denying the right for migrant farm workers to even organize. And the days of Labor Relations Act and family farms that denied union status, there are no more family farms in Canada, or very few. There are large corporate farms who regularly tap into and bring migrant labor to Canada. So the UFCW has been in the leading edge. Now the federal government is talking of changing the immigration policies of Canada to give employers more access, quicker turnaround in the space of 10 days, expanding to $250,000 a year, the Temporary Foreign Workers Program. These are workers who are not entitled to unemployment insurance. These are workers who wouldn't dare speak up in their workplace for fear of being deported immediately back to their countries. And in some of their countries, they're threatened for even mentioning the word union. So a trade union movement must use some of its resources and its voice to say there should be no second-class workers in Canada. We don't need temporary foreign workers with reduced labor rights. People should have the rights of citizenry in Canada, the right to form free trade unions, and there should be no subsidy for employers with less wages and disentitling people to employment insurance benefits just because they happen to be temporary foreign workers. So we have a job to do with employers who exploit workers. We have a job to do with the government of Canada, the federal government, that wants to make the rules even more favorable for employers. And anywhere in the world, including Canada, where we have workers who can't speak for fear of retribution themselves, they need the voice of the trade union movement to put their issues on the table. Most Canadians aren't aware of the plight of temporary foreign workers. If they were, it would violate most Canadian values. And only then, when we inform all citizens, can we pressure our government to say, we're better than that. These workers should not be exploited second-class group of citizens. They should have the rights of that all Canadian workers have. And my goodness, in 2012, we actually need an expansion of workers' rights, not less worker rights.
Worldwide, we are seeing movements rising up against neoliberalism, rising up against the IMF-imposed austerity measures. We are seeing the indignados in Europe and Spain. There has been a strike on March 29th. Over a million people lay down their tools. There is another strike being called for May 1st. You know, internationally. And the question is, you know, most of these movements are organizing not through the regular commercial media, because they're not reporting. They're organizing through independent media sources. They're organizing through, you know, networks within their community. And I think it's about time that our labor unions recognize that the commercial media is not going to represent our interests. Why do we continuously go back to supporting and enlarging, you know, the funds that this media uses to deny us our rights to speak?
I think you raise an important point. I mean, look at the students in Quebec. Through mainstream media and the rest of Canada, it's virtual silence until recent days. We're 10 weeks into that strike. So we need to learn from the Arab Spring. Many of the moves towards democracy or against dictatorships, the word spread through social media, through people bypassing mainstream media and mainstream structures. So you also mentioned the International Monetary Fund. The struggles in Europe, the European Central Bank has taken on IMF kind of powers, and they're imposing on Spain austerity measures. I mean, the Prime Minister of Italy is not an elected person. Mm-hmm. He was appointed. The Prime Minister of Greece is not an elected official, mm-hmm. appointed by the European Central Bank. And now we see in the United Kingdom, kind of similar to Canada in terms of an advanced nation, they're back into a double-dip recession, two quarters in a row of negative growth, and the austerity is actually propelling advanced economies back into recession, which many of us have argued in Canada and elsewhere that you can't shrink yourself to greatness. We need to invest in people. We need to invest in infrastructure. And if we're to learn anything from the events in Europe, it's that you can't shrink yourself to greatness. Austerity doesn't work, and the people will not be suppressed. They will rise up as they're doing in Spain. And I think on May 1st, we may see this throughout the planet, that workers need to reclaim their right to protest. And if that means bypassing mainstream media, because mainstream media has ignored workers for decades, I think we have new opportunities, such as the medium we're using here today. We have new opportunities to do what was obvious 100 years ago. It was obvious 100 years ago to workers that whether you were a worker in Latin America or Europe or North America or Asia, you had a bind that should tie you together. We're all working class people. Mainstream media arguably has destroyed working class culture by fiction and the pursuit of individual wealth, which is a pipe dream for most workers. In some respects, we've been lulled to sleep by mainstream media. Social media is reconnecting us with the events in Spain, the events in Greece, and it has the potential to unite workers, and there can't be a solution locally, nationally, or internationally without a united working class culture.
One of the issues we faced, you know, in the 1980s, we talk about the NAFTA and its impact on workers. Today, you know, new trade agreements are sprouting up left, right, and center. We're talking about a trade agreement with Asia. We're talking about CETA, the Canadian-Europe trade agreement. And I wonder if you could just briefly touch on the importance of not just the labor movement, but citizens in general opposing these kinds of models of economic.
Well, there's been some success. We often talk about failures, but the World Trade Organization is almost dead in the sand. The so-called Washington Consensus, that less regulation and more freedom for markets was the way to go, that is not, the Doha Round is dead. So we now have a series of countries, Canada's leading the way, bilateral trade agreements, the European Union with Asia, possibly with China, with some South American regimes like Colombia. Incredible to me that Canada, in the name of Canadians, would sign a trade deal in Colombia. Not only is there not basic labor rights, you take your life in your hands. I've been to Colombia to stand up for things that we regularly do here in Canada. But the whole trade agenda requires us to, number one, recognize that mainstream media will shut us out. I toured last year in 2011 with Maud Barlow, the Council of Canadians, 17 Canadian cities to discuss CETA. We have over 50 municipalities, including Toronto and Mississauga. Cities representing over 4 million Canadians have said no to the Comprehensive Economic Trade Agreement, Canada and the European Union. And I find it interesting, yesterday on April 27th, Mr. Harper sends half of his cabinet across Canada to extol the virtues of CETA. That's because he's worried. He's worried that Canadians are waking up. If the price tag for trade with Europe, and we believe in trade, we're a trading nation, but not the extension of intellectual property rights so that pharmaceutical drugs go up in price, not down. Canadians want generic drugs to be introduced quicker into the workplace. We want pharmaceutical costs to go down. And finally, for CUPE members, we work for municipalities across Canada. What's driving CETA from a European perspective? A couple of the largest private water companies on the planet are from Europe. They want access to procurement and contracts for Canada's water system. We need only look at the citizens of Abbotsford. They rejected privatization of their water system last November. They said no to funding from the federal government if it was tied to a so-called public-private partnership. So everywhere where we connect at a citizen-to-citizen level in Canada with our fellow citizens, they want us to be a trading nation. They want us to be a good workforce. They also want public water. So I think there's many challenges with a government like Harper's, but I take it as a compliment to the Council of Canadians and to CUPE and others that they're panicking and sending ministers across Canada to call us a bunch of dinosaurs and to sell CETA. They wouldn't have done that yesterday, April 27th, unless they felt some pressure. And the pressure's from the people, and the people don't want pharmaceutical costs going through the roof, and they don't want the privatization of water.
Finally, I think that, you know, as a labor movement, we often talk about what we've lost, but I think there's many battles that we win. And on an international level, I think that the labor movement have made some ingrounds, and there are connections that we are making. How do we envision the future going forward? Looking around the conference, you see a growing diversity. We're not there yet, you know, but I think there is room for improvement in all areas. However, what are some of the things that we must also celebrate today as a union movement, as a movement that belongs to the people?
Well, I think you're right. We do have many, many challenges, and sometimes we extend ourselves to thinking too much about those. We're also a movement in Canada of great accomplishment. Number one, we are a free trade union movement. We are not controlled by any government or any employer. Unfortunately, we can't say that about all trade unions around the world. Number two, we recognize we have a responsibility to our members at work. We have broader social union responsibilities. Three, I'm very proud in CUPE, we're adopting resolutions and concrete plans of action to force our employers who do the hiring to have a more diverse workforce. We shouldn't ghettoize new Canadians, racialize Canadians into low-paying jobs for the rest of their lives. And finally, there was a resolution here this week, and I've seen this elsewhere in CUPE in Canada, that we as a union need to take concrete steps to expand our global trade union activity. Direct worker-to-worker projects. We're working directly with workers in Cuba, providing them union education materials, computers, resources that they can't get their hands on themselves. So if we expand our global ties with worker-to-worker projects, healthcare workers to healthcare workers in Guatemala, municipal workers to municipal workers in South Africa, we could, given the resources, expand tenfold the direct worker-to-worker global projects. And if we resource people in the Middle East, in Asia, in South America, if we can help expand the resources they have available to them, if we win our struggles in Latin and Central America, in Asia, if we can win struggles there, we win as well as Canadians.
Thank you so much.
Hey, Sylvia, can I jump in there for a moment?
Yes, sure.
Hello, Mr. Morris. As you know, today is a National Day of Mourning, and incredibly, in the 21st century, over 1,000 workers are killed on the job every year. What would your advice as CUPE National President be to workers who go to work and see precarious conditions, union or non-union? What should be their response? How can they resist these unsafe conditions?
Number one, I think workers, we have a responsibility to confront unsafe conditions in our communities or at our workplace. Number two, the best advice I can give any worker is organize and have a collective voice to deal with those things. And three, whether we're individual citizens or members of trade unions who are workers as well, we have a responsibility to be an engaged citizenry and active politically, and we should confront anyone knocking on our door looking for our vote with fundamental issues like workplace health and safety. So April 28th is a day to mourn for the dead and commit to fight for the living. The other 364 days a year, with all of the issues we have before us, must include an ongoing commitment to never being silent about workplace safety and health issues, and struggling to elect politicians at all levels who will enforce these laws and enforce accountability on employers who flaunt the law.
Thank you, and I'll let you finish up, Sylvia.
Okay, great stuff.
Thank you again for joining us.
You're very welcome, and enjoy the 49th convention, Sylvia.
From the original CUPE-BC convention, we say goodbye. Thanks again for joining us.
Cheers.
Take care. Oh,
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.